Bharata Sarve, Sadasvai Swarana Bhushitai, Anbagach Chanarathair Vipra, Vyasadhom Yadayastata, Tadate Bhratara Sarve, Sadasvai Swarana Bhushitai, Anvagach Chanarathair Vipra, Vyasadhom Yadayaschata.
At that time, all his brothers followed him on beautiful chariots, drawn by first-class horses decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyas and rishis like Dhaumya, the learned priest of the Pandavas, and others.
Anapivi parashe paratena sadhananjaya sathaya vyarochata nripa kubera ivagu yakai.
O sage amongst the Brahmins, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also followed, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus, King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera, surrounded by his companions, the Guyakas. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna wanted the Pandavas to be present before Bhishma Dev in the most aristocratic order so that he might be pleased to see them happy at the time of his death. Kuvera is the richest of all the demigods, and herein King Yudhisthira appeared like him, Kuvera, for the procession along with Sri Krishna was quite appropriate to the royalty of King Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira, in his exemplary behavior as a great devotee of Lord Sri Krishna, is in despair. Although the greatest atrocities were severely inflicted against him, and although he was always perfectly pious and innocent in every respect, yet, for whatever happened, whatever went wrong, whatever pain and sufferings were experienced by others, he naturally took all the blame upon himself. In the material world, the conditioned nature of those who want to enjoy the position of God in their own way, those who are too much infatuated by the false ego, it is intolerable to consider oneself to be wrong, and even worse, when others consider you to be wrong. It is the natural escape of the ego to put blame and fault on others and to try to take as much credit as we can for ourselves. Yudhisthira Maharaj deserved all credit. With dignity and gentle, forgiving behavior, he tolerated the greatest abuses that this world has seen. Of course, we know the story. At one time, after the Pandavas were exiled to the forest for so many long years, And even that was done in an utterly cheating manner. Yudhisthira did not protest. But Duryodhana was not satisfied that he had taken away the entire kingdom of Yudhisthira, that he had taken away all the prestige of Yudhisthira. He wanted to further humiliate him, to put himself in a higher position. So while in the forest, Duryodhana arranged a royal procession into the jungle with great armor, gold, jewels, elephants, horses, chariots, flags, bedecked with all of the opulence he could possibly acquire, just to embarrass the Pandavas, who were living like hermits with nothing in the jungles. On the way, one Gandharva was bathing in a lake. Duryodhana, in his arrogance, ordered that he leave the lake so that he could bathe. He refused. There was a battle, and the Gandharva defeated all of the Kuru army and tied up. He went to tie up. In this way, there was an attack, and the Kurus, they were helpless. They had to flee in fear. At a certain point, the Kurus had to run to the Pandavas and say, "Please help us." And Bhima was so happy. Let them die, rascals. What they have done, sinful. Yudhisthira told the brothers, "No, go and fight and protect Duryodhana. We must fight to protect him. There are 100 of them. There are 5 of us. When we are fighting within ourselves, there are 100 of them and 5 of us. But when an outside force attacks, we become 105. So this was the nature of Yudhisthira. He wanted to preserve the dignity and the respectability of Duryodhana, although Duryodhana dedicated his entire life to destroy the dignity, even to destroy the very lives of the Pandavas. How forgiving, how gentle. And ultimately, this battle of Kurukshetra was not Yudhisthira's idea, it was Krishna's idea. Yudhisthira was willing to forgive them and let them have everything, if that was the will of God. But as we know, so many men died, so many women became widows, and Yudhisthira took all the blame upon himself. "Because of my greed to be king, just see how much pain was caused by others." Where do we find such qualities in this day and age? He was genuinely, from the very bottom of his heart, repentant, and he had no enthusiasm to take the kingdom. So Krishna, who wanted to fulfill many purposes through one action, arranged for the Pandavas to go to visit Bhishmadev, who was then laying in a bed of arrows on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Here it is being explained, the procession which Krishna arranged. The 5 brothers, with Yudhisthira in front, were proceeding with beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses decorated by gold ornaments, With them were the greatest of rishis, Vyas and Domya, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. Arjuna is addressed here as Dhananjay. Dhananjay means one who has conquered, was victorious over claiming great wealth. And this is significant. This procession, Srila Prabhupada explains, was at least one Akshohini division of soldiers, which means, I think, something like 60,000 chariots, all drawn by several horses. And each horse was decorated profusely with golden ornaments. How much wealth is that? Srila Prabhupada explains, each horse must have had at least 5 ounces of gold. How much is 1 ounce of gold today? Huh? 1.5 lakhs for 1 ounce. So that means 7 lakhs of gold decorating each horse. And there were 60,000 chariots with so many horses on each chariot. So how much gold is that? Can anyone in the world afford such a procession? What to speak of all of the ornaments decorating the soldiers riding the horses with their crowns and their armor and their necklaces and so forth. It is explained that the battle takes so much money to fight a battle. Any nation that's in war has to take so many loans, so many credits, has to exert so much. This battle of Kurukshetra, we can imagine the cost of this war for each side. And after the battle, There was a yajna, and the yajna, unbelievable amounts of wealth is necessary for a yajna. Prabhupada explains that for a proper yajna to be done before the age of Kali began, you needed tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of pure ghee from cows. And every article of the yajna had to be not plated, but solid, pure gold. The altar had to be pure, solid gold. The arena had to be made of pure, solid gold. All of the utensils had to be pure, solid gold. To perform a single yajna, by today's standard, you had to be a multi-trillionaire. Otherwise, you could not do it. And when Yudhisthira wanted to perform this yajna, he didn't have the necessary gold. So he requested Arjuna to go to somehow or other make this yajna possible, to win wealth. So Krishna, who is the knower of past, present, and future, told Arjuna that there's a certain place in Himalayas where you can get all the gold you want. He said, previously, there was great kings who performed great yajna. And after this yajna, they give all the gold away. They don't keep any of it. It has to be given in charity, whatever is there. In fact, in this yajna, tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of Brahmins were fed on solid gold plates. And it was the custom of the time that no high-class person would ever eat on the same plate more than once. Just like today, you know, we have leaf plates. And maybe people are very primitive culture, they may use the leaf plate many times. But even the poorest people, after one time eating on leaf plate, they throw it away without considering its value. Or clay cup, you throw it away. This is standard. Amongst these great kings, this was their prestige, this was their culture, that you eat off solid gold plate and you throw it away. Throw it away means you usually give it in charity. So this king gave so much charity of so much gold and plates to the Brahmins. There was so much that the Brahmins simply couldn't carry it all. And they weren't not at all attached to it. So they just left it in the forest. And it has been there for a long time. Nobody knew. But Krishna knew. So Krishna told Arjuna, there is unlimited, practically huge quantities of gold there. I will show you where it is. So Krishna, as charioteer, took Arjuna and he brought back enough gold for an entire yajna to be performed. And therefore, he was known as Dhananjay, one who was victorious over bringing back great, great quantities of wealth in the service of his brother, Yudhisthira Maharaj. So here it's very wonderfully explained what type of royal opulence the king had. And Krishna, especially, was very much desiring that Bhishma, in his last moments of life, would see the Pandavas enthroned as the king and see the Pandavas decorated in the most royal possible opulences, which is a sign of great victory. Krishna performed this whole wonderful pastime for the pleasure of Bhishma Dev. Krishna's greatest pleasure is to see the pleasure of his devotee. This is the nature of his supreme love. Bhishma had been in the most difficult, controversial positions throughout most of his entire life. But Krishna, he is in the heart of every living being. He knows the innermost desires and feelings, especially of his devotees. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayesh arjuna. In the heart of every living being, Krishna is the witness. Krishna knew Bhishma's trials and tribulations in life, and he also knew his love for the Pandavas. When the Pandavas were born, it was Bhishma's great desire that Yudhisthira be put on the throne as king. And although Bhishma warned and instructed Dhritarashtra in so many ways, Dhritarashtra, under the control of his son's association, became terribly cruel and biased against Yudhisthira. And Bhishma had to see that. And Bhishma, he was one of the few people who knew this terrible plot to destroy the Pandavas in the house of Lak in Varnataka. And he was the few. And when the news came that they were killed, that they were burnt to ashes, Bhishma, he was there present. But Vidura informed Bhishma, because he did not want to see Bhishma suffer terribly such a broken heart. Because
Vidura knew Bhishma's love for the Pandavas.
When Karna first entered into the assembly of Dronacharya's great tournament, and Arjuna was showing his great prowess, Karna came, and when he started showing his prowess, he actually defeated Arjuna, and they became worst of enemies. And when Queen Kunti saw Karna with the earrings and the chest plate, she understood that this is my son. This is the baby child on the day of his birth that I floated in a basket on the river Ganges. And she fainted. And Bhishma had such divine perception that immediately upon seeing Kunti faint by seeing this unknown warrior who nobody had ever seen before, he could understand that this was Kunti's first son. And for so many years, Karna, due to the influence of Duryodhana, became the worst enemy of Arjuna, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev. And Bhishma, although he could not disclose the secret out of his respect for Kunti Devi, he was always chastising Karna. He was always correcting him. He was always humiliating him out of love, because it was intolerable for him to see such a great personality fighting against his own brothers, who are all pure, unalloyed devotees of the Lord. And this is why, when the battle of Kurukshetra began, this was the excuse of Karna. He said to Duryodhana, "If you're making Bhishma the commander-in-chief, I'm not going to fight, because he only criticizes me. He only finds fault with me. I cannot tolerate working under him." So he remained out of the battle until Bhishma was on his bed of arrows. Bhishma saw such injustices and so many more for so many years, but in his heart of hearts, as a devotee of Krishna, he knew what role he had to play in this lila. It was Krishna's desire even that he fight on the other side, just to prove that even the greatest of all warriors will be defeated if they are not on the side of Krishna. And we see the reality. Even the greatest heroes and conquerors, they are ultimately defeated, they lose everything, and they die if they are not on the side of God. So Krishna knew that it was Bhishma's lifelong desires that Yudhisthira and his brothers be put on the throne as kings and that they be glorified by the whole world. And on his deathbed, Krishna wanted to fulfill all the desires of Bhishma. We may think, if Krishna is so anxious to fulfill the desires of his devotees, why did he leave Bhishma's desires unfulfilled his entire life? Why only at the last minute? But Bhishma himself, as will be explained in this chapter, explains that no one, even the greatest philosophers, the greatest yogis, the greatest mystics, the greatest scholars, no one can understand the inconceivable will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the very controller of time itself, imperceptible time.
He himself was explaining why the Pandavas had to go through all this. There's only one way we can understand, through faith, not through logic, not through reason, but only through faith. Because Krishna's nature, Krishna's will, is beyond logic or reason. If we try to figure out Krishna's activities with our own intelligence, we can come to a certain point, but then we will be utterly bewildered. Because Krishna is achintya. He is inconceivable. His mercy is inconceivable. Everything about him is inconceivable. The Brahma Samhita explains how Krishna, every one of his transcendental limbs, can perform the activities of every of his other limbs. He could taste through his eyes what we require a tongue for. He can perform the same activity with his eyes. Today in this world, one of the biggest problems is people are overweight because they cannot stop eating, because they like the taste of food so much they just can't stop eating due to the ferocious tongue. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the tongue is so ferocious, uncontrollable, of all the senses, very difficult. So even though people want to, for their health, for their appearance, they want to be lean and thin, they cannot control their tongue. They have to eat more and more and more. And as they eat, they gain more and more weight. If our eyes could do the same function as tongue, we could just see the food and become completely satisfied, and we'd never have to worry about becoming overweight. But we're limited. We cannot do that. We have to torture ourselves. We have to fast. This is our conditioned, limited nature. But Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. His body is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. He's Nava Yovanam Cha. He never ages. Whatever age he wants to be, he is. In his original form, he's always a youth, about 15 years old, eternally. We only get 15 years for 1 year, and then it's finished. No matter how much you want. And every limb of his body, as explained, is unlimited. He can taste our offerings through his eyes. He can impregnate through his eyes. When we want to procreate, we have to go through such a process for one child. But Krishna, just by one glance, he can impregnate innumerable living entities within the womb of material nature. That is the power of God. So he's inconceivable. And his personality is inconceivable. What to speak of his divine will? And in this material world, he controls everything through the power of time, Kala Rupa. In the 11th chapter of Gita, Krishna displays his Virat Rupa to Arjuna. He wants to show Arjuna, this is the personification of my form of time. Just see how everyone and everything will be devoured by this form of mine, which is manifesting as time. All powerful, all devouring. Bhishma explains that the will of the Lord can only be understood by faith. And what is that faith? That Krishna is all good. That whatever he does is perfectly for the benefit and welfare of all living beings. And especially, whatever he does in relationship to his devotee is perfectly just what that devotee requires for that devotee's perfection of life. And throughout the scriptures we find how Krishna puts his devotees in very, very difficult predicaments. And the classic example is the Pandavas themselves. All their children were killed right before their eyes practically. Abhimanyu, who was only a teenage boy, he was killed. And then after that, he was the son of Subhadra. And then the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, they were all killed by Ashwatthama. Why? People in this world, they have some belief in God. Also, their father was killed when they were just tiny little children. People today, if they're little children and their father dies, and then they grow up and they're married, and everything's taken away from them, without any reason at all, as far as their own guilt, and then all their children are murdered unfairly, people lose faith in God. They think, why? Why is God doing this to me? If God is the supreme controller, and I'm his devotee, why would he take away father? Why would he insult my wife? Why would he take away all my possessions? Why would he kill all my children? But the Pandavas never asked this question. They always had complete faith in Krishna, because they knew that whatever Krishna does is perfect. Whatever Krishna allows to take place through material nature is perfect. And Bhishma is explaining, do not try to understand with your intelligence, because you cannot. Because your intelligence is anu, it is infinitesimal. But Krishna's will, everything about Krishna is vibhu, it is unlimited, it is inconceivable. Srila Prabhupada used to use the example, penny wise, pounds foolish. For some immediate benefit, we do not consider the long-term effect of what it will do to our lives. But Krishna, although he allows us to some extent to live in our penny wise, pounds foolish sense gratification, means that we get a little pleasure now and then so much karma that we have to deal with in the future. But for the devotee, Krishna is always anxious to see in terms of the future, not only this life, because this life is not very meaningful as far as its duration of time. The only thing meaningful in this life is the realizations and the progress in spiritual life that we can somehow or other achieve. That's the only meaning of life. Everything else is quite worthless. Krishna sees through the eyes of eternity. We see through the eyes of, I have maybe 70 or 80 years to live in this world, and then everything is finished. So let me get the most out of life. Eat, drink, be merry, for life is short. Tomorrow may never come. This is the mantra, this is the philosophy of modern civilization. When we drive through the streets of Bombay and we see all the billboards attracting people by the latest scandals of the movie actresses and movie actors, and attracted by all the various items that can give you some prestige, some physical beauty, some enjoyment. People are so anxious, hungry for money, for wealth, because they want to enjoy. They do not know that this whole life and everything about it, kamaladala jala jivana talamala, it's like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. At any moment, it's gone. Not only at any moment, it is guaranteed, 100% guarantee, that at any moment it will be gone. That is the nature of this world. And yet we're so attached to being very beautiful, to having nice facilities, nice comforts. But from Krishna's point of view, this is all a waste. Your soul is eternal. Your soul is seeking eternal transcendental satisfaction. This body only lasts a flicker of a moment in the eyes of eternity, and you're spending all your time to try to make this body comfortable, not knowing that in the end you will simply suffer. Better I give you some suffering now and break you out of this ridiculous illusion and at least give you the opportunity, the chance to understand the real purpose of life. Self-realization, Krishna consciousness. Yasyaham anagrinami harishyeta tanam shanai. Yesterday, Sri Radha Gopinath Ji Prabhu was reading from Srila Prabhupada's biography. And there, Srila Prabhupada was in Jhansi. And he was just struggling with such endeavor to establish the League of Devotees. He had nothing and no one, but somehow or other he got some facility, and one person was willing to help him, Acharya Prabhakar. And at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was vanaprast, and he had his business going, what, Allahabad, something? And that business was providing to some extent for him, for his family. And he got a letter. And the letter said that his own employees, his own servants, they stole everything out of the business. And they ran away. There was nothing left. Lakhs of rupees or whatever, maybe not. In those days, it was worth more than lakhs of today's standards. And this message came. And Acharya Prabhakar said, I think you better go to Calcutta and help your family in this way. Srila Prabhupada just remembered this verse from Bhagavatam. Yasyaha namagrinami harishyeta tanam shanai. And as he was remembering this verse, he laughed. That when Krishna wants to show his great mercy to his devotee, takes everything away. So that devotee has nothing else and no one else to turn to except Krishna. That is mercy. Break you out of the illusion that this world is everything. And understand this world is nothing. Krishna is everything. And then his son, Vrindavan Chandradas, who a few months ago came to this temple to visit with his children and wife, very favorable person. But then he was very young, and he came to Jhansi and told Srila Prabhupada that you should come home to Calcutta with me and help, because now it's a crisis. And Srila Prabhupada told him, you should stay here with me and assist me in my Guru Maharaj's mission. Even you should not go home. Now this may seem cruel, heartless, but no. You cannot understand the mind of a great Vaishnava. Why? Because the mind of the great Vaishnav is in tune with the mind of Krishna. Vaishnavera kriya muda vigyana bhujai. Therefore, you cannot understand Krishna's mind. So, Srila Prabhupada, through this incident, he understood what his Guru Maharaj said. There's only one problem in this entire creation, and that is a lack of Krishna consciousness. And there's only one solution to this problem, and that is Krishna consciousness. And every other problem is only a reflection of the real problem, that we have forgotten our eternal relationship with God. And this world is full of problems. You cannot stop the problems of this world. It's not possible. This world has been created as one big, gigantic problem. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Solution to the one problem becomes the cause of other problems. And if you ever think there'll be a time when problems are solved, that is your greatest illusion. Individually, collectively, nationally, internationally, socially, on every level, you solve one problem, but you can know for sure another will come. Right here in this little temple, there may be a problem, serious problem, and we're so concerned, we try to work it out, which we have to, it is our service to God. But be sure that soon after, another problem will come. For a devotee, we welcome the problems because it gives us an opportunity for service. But look at the world. World War I. The war that ends all wars. Somehow or other, the Allied forces won. But then, there was World War II, which they named the war that ends all wars. And the Allied forces won. And America was celebrating. Now there's peace on earth. But then there was Korean War. And when that was finished, now there's peace. And there was the Vietnam War. And then there's the communists, the Russians. They were the great threat. And then that was dismantled. But now Bosnia and San Salvador and Nicaragua and all these places, so many wars. When will it end? It will end when Mahavishnu inhales. For some time. But then when he exhales again, and we're thinking that we'll make some solution, even in our own life. Diseases can come upon anybody at any minute. Death and family can come anytime, in any minute. Death to ourself. We cannot escape. And Krishna explains that it is your duty to try to maintain and survive as far as possible. But don't be attached to these things because you cannot. The ultimate solution is to become Krishna consciousness. And to transcend the temporary miseries of this creation. So therefore, when Krishna puts his devotee in some distressful condition, inconceivable condition, it may be difficult for us to deal with now, but Krishna sees what's best for the future of our lives. Not only this life, but the future of the life of our very Atma or soul. Krishna only sees in terms of this. If you worship the demigod, because many of the demigods are very much attached to their own material enjoyment. So they're also very concerned with their devotees' material enjoyment. Because the whole world is an extension of our own consciousness. Indra is very attached to material wealth. And if you worship him very nicely, he'll think, well, if I want to make him happy, I have to give him nice wealth. Because that's what makes me happy. So therefore, Krishna says, less intelligent people worship the demigods for material favors. But if you worship Krishna, he's Hari. He may give, he may not give. He will do what's best for you. He may give just so you become intoxicated, infatuated, then he takes it away. Krishna's wonderful. If you never had much, it's not very disappointing if you lose it. But if you have everything, then you lose it. Then you get like the Avanti Brahman. He had everything, and it was all taken away. What was his conclusion? To surrender to Krishna. That was Krishna's mercy, his will. Antaya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Krishna says, I will always protect my devotee. And that is Krishna's word, and his word is the absolute truth. It is infallible. How he protects his devotee, you cannot understand. You can understand that he does. It's like a child. When a child goes to the doctor's office, Abhimanyu or Madhavananda has just left, he's a pediatrician. He can tell you that when children come and he gives them injections and things like that, they don't like him at all. They think he's a very cruel person. But he's thinking in terms of their future. Better you cry like a baby for some time in pain now so that you can have health in the future than you live happily now and suffer terrible disease in the future. So you should know that when Krishna puts us in a suffering condition of life, he's giving our jivatma, our soul, some injection, which will actually have very healing benefits for the future. But presently, it's very painful. Very, very painful. So this faith was demonstrated so perfectly by Bhishma Dev himself. And Bhishma, although he had to see the hardships of the Pandavas, it is more painful than anything that could have possibly inflicted upon himself. Because he's a Mahajan, he's a Mahabhagavat, he's selfless, para dukkha dukkhi. The great souls, their pain is to see the suffering of others, especially other devotees who are so dear to Krishna. Bhishma had to suffer the terrible, terrible pain of seeing the Pandavas, pure unalloyed devotees, put through such injustices for so long. And it was his heart's desire that the Pandavas be given what they deserve. They always had Krishna. Therefore, they were always perfectly situated. But in this world, they deserved to be the royal kings living in all opulence, because that was their swadharma. That was their prescribed duty. That was being... It was not being allowed to them. So, Krishna wanted to show Bhishma that all is well that ends well. You lived your life painfully witnessing these injustices, but at your last moment, you're going to see the fulfillment of all your desires. You are going to see Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers bedecked with wealth and opulence that the world has never seen. And you are going to see them with me in the light of victory. And ultimately, Bhishma not only wanted to see the wonderful, wonderful pleasure of his and glory of his of the Lord's devotees, but he wanted to see Krishna himself. So Krishna came to fulfill all of Bhishma's desires. Bhishma was so selfless that he was always in the mood of seeing the devotees happy. And Krishna knew that nothing would make him happier than seeing the Pandavas happy. This should be our mood. An envious person wants to see devotees have difficulty. Because we're having difficulty, we think everyone should have difficulty. But real devotees, they want to see other devotees glorified in every respect. They want to see devotees getting Krishna's mercy in every respect of their life. They want to see devotees becoming more and more and more successful in their services. We never should compare ourselves to other devotees. As soon as you compare yourselves, you become envious. It's natural, material nature. Devotees don't do like this. I know so many slokas. Nobody should know more than me. I can cook so many preparations. No one should be able to cook better than me. I can dress the deity in a nice way. No one should dress them better than me. What does that mean? That means we want Krishna to suffer. We want the service and the pleasure of Krishna to be limited to our own. But a real devotee, when he sees another devotee being empowered, when he sees another devotee becoming successful in whatever he or she does, in their realizations, in their tapasya, in their knowledge, in their ability to present knowledge, in whatever service, a devotee simply is praying to Krishna that every other Vaishnava prospers unlimitedly. And the better they become, the more blissful we become. Why? Because the most service is done to Krishna. And the greatest fortune is being experienced by these devotees. And our greatest fortune is when we are able to be joyful to see the good fortune of others. Our great fortune is not that we become very, very successful or that we become very, very expert in our services. That is not such a great fortune. The greatest fortune is when we have the appreciation of finding joy and bliss when another gets that mercy. Then we should know we have really been blessed by Krishna. And that was Bhishma Dev. He personally gave up the opportunity for the throne by his own will. He was the natural inheritor of the throne of Hastinapur. And his own father wanted him to be there. But he was so concerned with his father's happiness, who was a great devotee, Santanu Maharaj, that he gave up all the opulence, royalty, and power of the king just to please his father. Such a selfless person. And he never aspired for it. Although the king, the throne was meant for him, his greatest joy in life was to see Yudhisthira sitting on his throne. This is the nature of a real Vaishnava. This is the example of Bhishma Dev. Simply concerned with the glory and the welfare of other devotees, and not concerned at all with his own. He was laying on a bed of arrows. They didn't shoot his face, but from his face down to his feet, his body was covered with so many arrows that you could not put even your smallest finger between any two arrows. There were hundreds and hundreds of arrows piercing his body, going in one side and out the other. And he was laying on such a bed of arrows for months. And he was alone. He had no personal servants attending his needs. He was just laying there in Kurukshetra, and it was the winter. For those who have been in Kurukshetra in the winter, you know that you need blankets and sleeping bags and all sorts of other things to keep warm. It's our own devotees. Every time we send someone to be with Shukadeva Maharaj, they leave because it's too cold. Shukadeva Maharaj is here? Huh? All right, what did you... Anyways, it's very cold. And Bhishma was just laying there on the battlefield, subject to all the elements, with arrows piercing his body every inch. And he wasn't complaining. During his last moment, he didn't say, "Krishna, take these arrows out of me. Krishna, let me die in a nice palatial building." He was just laying in the dirt on the ground with nothing. But when he saw Yudhisthira in such opulence and victory, that was his satisfaction. Didn't even consider his own situation, only Yudhisthira's. He is being glorified. He is victorious. He has received Krishna's great mercy. This is the perfection of my desires. This is my happiness. And because he had such consciousness, that is why Krishna personally appeared to him at the time of his death. Because he had such selfless love for the Lord's devotees that Krishna personally arranged to stand right before him and allow him to completely immerse his consciousness in Krishna at the time of death. And if you want to purely remember Krishna at the time of death, we have to follow in the footsteps of Bhishma and have such selfless love for Krishna's devotees, such a selfless service attitude toward Krishna's devotees. Take such joy in the fortune of other devotees. And internally, when we find envy, jealousy, material competitive spirit in our heart, know that this is our impediment. Devotees compete, but they don't compete selfishly. They compete selflessly. I will do more to inspire you to do more. And then the most service is done for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna and for the pleasure of all of us. But if we do cheating so that we look better than another, we should understand this is not bhakti. This is bhukti. This is sense gratification. Subtle sense gratification. So we should be very, very aware of what real standard of devotional service is, as portrayed in these verses today. Krishna knew Bhishma's desire to see the glory of his devotees. So Krishna arranged that the most unbelievable exhibition of grandeur was around the Pandavas, and Bhishma laying there on the hard, cold ground in a bed of arrows would be ecstatic to see that. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki! Bhishma didn't want the throne. Bhishma wanted the Pandavas to have the throne. But his greatest pleasure was not to see the Pandavas with all of their golden ornaments as the emperors of the world. His greatest pleasure was to see that they were with Krishna. And they were with such great devotees of Krishna like Vyas and Daumya, their guru. And Krishna gave Bhishma the supreme opulence, the supreme wealth, the supreme fortune, because Krishna gave Bhishma himself. He is Lakshminath. He is the husband, the controller, the lord of all fortune. And Bhishma had nothing except Krishna. Nothing but Krishna and a service attitude toward Krishna's devotees. And that is the greatest fortune. That is the greatest victory in our life, if somehow we can achieve that before we die. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions?
You said that the devotees should not compare each other. But it is usually seen that the grihasthas have the tendency of comparing with each other. Even though they are devotees.
What do grihasthas compare? Who has more square feet in their flat? Who has more expensive car? Who has nicer saris and bangles? Who has a more beautiful wife? Like that?
Yeah, so many.
Who has bigger income? Who has more degrees in their education? What is your question?
Yes, Maharaj. Like these things like this.
What else? Who eats nicer prasad? whose wife is a better cook? Who invites more sadhus to their home? Who gives bigger donations? What else? It's endless. So what is your question?
At the item which you enumerated, at every item there is comparison and there is a possibility of breeding envy. Amongst others. So how to come over till we are not pure devotees of Krishna? Till we become pure devotees of Krishna, how to, in this period of time, how to avoid that tendency?
First, you must have very good sadhana. Because without good sadhana, good satsang, without hearing nicely Bhagavat philosophy, chanting Krishna's names, we do not even have the potential to have a spiritual perception of life. So that is essential. With our sadhana, with our seeing through the eyes of scripture and through Guru and the Vaishnavas rather than our own eyes, we have to develop a proper intelligence. Krishna says we must defeat the lower self with the higher self. The lower self is the mind and senses conditioned by material envy. The mind and senses will naturally, due to our conditioned nature, be envious of someone who is progressing in life on any level, materially or spiritually. But our intelligence, based on the words of Guru and Krishna, must always be fighting against our mind. We must understand that the purpose of life is to make spiritual advancement. And if I'm envious of another devotee because of their progress, that will be a great stumbling block to my spiritual progress. And if I can curb that, that will be a great asset to my spiritual progress. So when we compare, we should do it in a positive way. Naturally you compare, but you should compare in a positive way. That if this person is doing so much, let me follow in his footsteps or follow in her footsteps by doing so much. And if I'm doing more than a person, then let me try to help this person to do equal to or better than me. We should compare in this way. We should compare in a mood of service, not in a mood of lording it over material nature and being an enjoyer. And we have to use our intelligence to beat down our mind's envious nature with this understanding. Because ultimately, if you please Krishna, your life is perfect. And this is the only way you'll really please Krishna. We should do, it's not that we should purposely do terrible just so that other people think they're better than us. Because that's another form of Maya. Your purpose is to enthuse and inspire people to do more. You should do the best you possibly can in everything you do to inspire devotees by your enthusiasm. But you shouldn't do it to defeat them. You should do it to inspire them, to help them, to serve them. That is bhakti. And when you see somebody else doing better than you, you should be inspired to increase your service. And feel that this person is my Prabhu. Such a wonderful well-wisher, doing so well, helping me so much to understand how well I should be doing also. So our intelligence has to see things, and unless we hear this truth, we cannot see it in this way. We become jealous, we become envious towards spiritual progress. As far as material things, we should never compare in any way, because that's all nonsense. Sudama Vipra had nothing, but he was satisfied. He had Krishna. And then when he had his big, big palace, it made no difference to him. Or in this story, Duryodhana had everything, and the Pandavas had nothing except Krishna. Duryodhana had everything except Krishna, and the Pandavas had nothing except Krishna. So who had greater wealth? So we should not be like Duryodhanas, trying to compare our material situation to others. We should know that if somebody is living in the ghetto but they're Krishna conscious, they have more wealth than us, even if we're living on Malabar Hill. The only wealth that we strive to recognize as true wealth is Krishna consciousness. And we cannot have Krishna consciousness until we follow in the footsteps of Bhishma Dev here and have a humble disposition of being a genuine well-wisher and servant of the Lord's devotees. Bhishma could have thought, that throne was meant for me. But Bhishma was thinking, let the Pandavas enjoy that throne. Let me lay here on the battlefield, bleeding in a bed of arrows, but let them be happy. That should be our goal of life, we have that consciousness. Yes. In which words will you ask your question today? In which particular dress will that same question appear today?
This is completely a different question.
You're trying to disguise the question. Yes.
Maharaj, from last so many days, it has disturbed my spiritual life. So I thought I'll ask you directly this question. I don't want to offend any devotees, but it has disturbed me, so I thought I'll just directly ask him, because this problem even many other devotees are also facing it. We have been trained by you from last so many years that a person, a grastas, if he really wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, he should have the highest respect for the brahmacharis and the sannyasis. And that respect, a brahmachari and a sannyasi, he can get it when he sees the brahmacharis and the sannyasis. They have a very simple life. They have a very, very, so to say, a serving attitude. They work like more than what we people are working. And when we see the lifestyle, when we see that thing, it comes from within that we want to have a respect and we want to follow them. This is the way you trained us. This is the way we used to follow. But from last so many days, when we see the gurus and the GBCs of ISKCON, when we see their lifestyle, their way of living, the way of thinking.
This is a different question altogether? Yes.
You asked the same question to Sridhar Swami a few days ago.
I could not get the proper reply, so I thought it I'll ask you. So when we see that the gurus and the GBCs and all of them, the lifestyle and everything, we don't want to offend it, but we want to have a respect for them. But we have been trained in that way to have a respect only on that basis. We could not get that type of respect for them, and we could not take the fullest association of them because we have been trained on that basis. So how to see to it that we get the respect for them the way we used to have a respect for you?
You have to have a proper understanding of what the training has been. The real essence of renunciation is complete dedication to the mission of the Lord. The essence of renunciation is not just sleeping on a floor or sitting on a mat or wearing torn clothing or eating rice with stones in it. This is not the real spirit of bhakti and renunciation. The real spirit of renunciation, according to Rupa Goswami, Yukta Vairagya, is to use everything we have in Krishna's service. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was the greatest renunciate. He was a perfect celibate. He had the capacity to perform tremendous tapasya. But he gave that up because he understood that it's not the best way to serve the Lord, just sitting in Mayapur, performing tapasya, fasting, chanting all day, sleeping on the muddy ground. He could do it, and he did it. But he understood it's not the best way to preach. Therefore, he built beautiful temples. In Bagh Bazar, a beautiful marble temple. And he lived in it. And in those days, the traditional sannyasi would never wear shoes. But he wore nice shoes. And he also, you see pictures. Generally, he's in sannyas robes, but sometimes he would wear nice coats, Western coats. And sometimes he would drive in car. And for a sannyasi to drive in car, in those days there were only a few cars in all of Calcutta. And he had one of them. But with these material conveyances, which the Babaji's criticized him for, the Babaji's saying you should walk barefoot, you should never drive in a car, you should never even take a train. You should walk. You should not have anything but live under a tree. But the difference is he made over 60,000 disciples and opened over 64 branches. And he also wrote so many books. He demonstrated millions of times greater renunciation and detachment than any of these so-called renunciates. Because he dedicated everything, even all of as much of Krishna's energies as Krishna would provide in Krishna's service. But he did nothing for his own sense gratification. We read in Srila Prabhupada's biography the extent of his renunciation, that he went on the Jaladuta to America. Quite a simple way to get to America. 1 month sitting on a cargo ship with all the waves and the storms and everything. And we think, what great renunciation, what great sacrifice. But then after a few years, he was flying on jet airplanes to America. He would take the same voyage from Calcutta to America on Air India instead of Skindia cargo ships. Now you tell me, is one a greater renunciation than other? Did Srila Prabhupada fall down from his standard of tapasya by not taking the Jaladutta every time he wanted to go somewhere? Srila Prabhupada understood that whatever he did was for the service of Krishna, whatever he did was for the service of Guru, and whatever was favorable to helping people become Krishna conscious, he was willing to accept it. This was the mood of his Guru, and this is Rupa Goswami's teaching. So you shouldn't think that brahmacharya and sannyas simply means physical austerity. Real brahmacharya and sannyas means no sense gratification for yourself, but complete dedication to the mission of Guru and Gauranga. And we should analyze accordingly. If someone has some material facilities, but they're genuinely using it to bring others to Krishna consciousness, that is renunciation, perfect renunciation. And you are not in a position necessarily to judge what a person's motivation is. In different areas, different things are required for preaching. In many places of the world, and Prabhupada taught us, people will not respect you and they will not listen to you unless they think you're successful. He had some of his disciples going for PhDs and they were brahmacharis. So that people, and he had that purse, those persons put PhD after their name, wherever they put their name. Now you may think that's false ego. It is, if he wanted to be glorified. But if having that PhD, MA, after his name, wherever he went, if that would give him entrance to influential people so that he could preach to them and they would respect what he said, that is renunciation. That's higher than presenting oneself to be illiterate under those circumstances. And when Srila Prabhupada saw his devotees with shabby clothes, even brahmacharis and sannyasis, he didn't like. He said, if you want respectable people in this society to respect you, you have to look respectable. He didn't necessarily say great opulence, but you should look respectable. And Prabhupada himself set that standard. If you're living in Vrindavan and you're just mixing with Brijbasis, then you could wear one torn loincloth and that's all you require. But if you're going into the cities and preaching, which according to Srila Prabhupada is a higher standard of renunciation than sitting under a tree, and you have to present yourself for the benefit of others, whatever works best. This is detachment. This is renunciation. So we have to understand that different people who have high positions in the preaching field, they may have a particular vision of who they're supposed to be trying to invoke Krishna consciousness within. And you may not understand that. So it's best that you do not judge. You just see, is this person dedicating his life to help others become Krishna conscious? Is this person having very good sadhana? If that's the case, we should bow to his lotus feet. If we do not see it, better we don't judge it. Better we just realize that I don't understand, Haribo. Does that answer your question? So will you ask this question again? to the next visiting sannyasi who comes? Will you ask? Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.